It's time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
All right, let's get the party started here with people from the parties. Jamie Ellerton, principal at Kinaptus Limited, Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited, and Lisa Kinsella, managing partner of Daisy Consulting Group. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Tasha.
Okay, so we're going to kick this off with the big provincial story, but, you know, it has implications for the federal scene, too, because if Doug Ford does become premier, I could pose some interesting situations for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. We're going to start now with the first attack ad that we've heard, because Doug Ford has been out there talking up a storm the last few days, and he said everything from, you know, he's contemplating privatizing some sales of pot, having some competition for the government on that, and maybe on alcohol too. A lot of free market talk and a lot of business talk. And so the Liberals are now saying that he was attempting to mansplain business to reporter Robin Urbach of the CBC. Take a listen.
Well, how?
Very simple. You haven't done it. I've done it. That's the difference. Next question, Robin. I know you've never done purchasing. I've done it on a multi-million dollar business.
Well, with all due respect, I'm doing the interview with you.
I know, and I'm answering your question. Can you find 4 cents in the government? Matter of fact, let me answer that for you, Robin, since you're unable to.
What is something that's going to be new in there?
Well, why don't you stay tuned, Robin, and we'll talk about that when I put it out.
Okay.
Robin, we may disagree, but with you or without you, Robin, we're moving this province forward.
Dun, dun, dun. Dramatic music. I don't know where they got that from, but yeah, Lisa, I'm going to start with you because I think I may know what you want to say, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Was he mansplaining or not?
Well, I think what we just saw was the first kind of shine off the newly anointed PC leader, where he was completely wrong in his approach. The interview was a disaster. He clearly, for whatever reason, I think Robin got under his skin. Perhaps she was asking tough questions that he should have been able to answer without him taking that kind of condescending tone that he did. And yeah, it sure does sound like he was trying to mansplain to her a bit about business. And of course, when you're just weeks away from moving into an election campaign, the last thing you want to do is make enemies of the media. I think Robin handled herself very well. And Mr. Ford, this doesn't bode well if this is how he is going to try to put his best foot forward.
Okay, Jamie, I'm wondering about that because I asked callers the same question earlier in the show. One of them said, actually, they think it was planned, that he wants to show that the media, he's an enemy of the media because there's an appetite for there among the electorate. Do you think that might be fair?
Yeah, I think there's probably something to that. And I think even if looking at the reaction online, those on the left side of the political spectrum kind of had their heads exploded and are calling the interview a total disaster, whereas those on the right kind of thought he'd handled a tough interview rather well and just kind of took them head on. And as the CBC host was putting forth a lot of questions that kind of had a partisan liberal basis to essentially with their messaging of recent of late, he just kind of deflected and bat them down like whack-a-mole one by one.
Whack-a-mole. I think yeah, I could see that. Somebody's got to do a gif of that, really. That'd be awesome. Sally, was he being sexist or not?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd call that mansplaining or just being a jerk, to be totally honest, right? That's what it's hard for me to listen to because he's just being a real jerk. It's disrespectful. It's dismissive. You know, I'd have to maybe hear a comparison. What I found interesting was the linguistic keeping using her name over and over again.
Yes.
Very condescending, very dismissive. But, you know, there is something very Trumpian about it, both in kind of in terms of a linguistic programming way, a dismissiveness of, you know, of the media in that respect. Was it planned? I mean, one of my favorite sayings is never attribute to cunning what can be attributed to incompetence. So, you know, but I mean, Jamie's right, is that people who like Ford are going to think it's great. People who dislike him are going to think he was being a jerk. And that's why I'm on that side.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, despite unpopularity with some Ontarians, 48% of them say that they don't approve of him, but still 44% of them would vote for him, according to the latest poll. So, you know, I'm wondering here, Lisa, if one went by the polls today, if he did become premier, let's just hypothetically say, and he continued this sort of blunt style of talking and dealing with issues, how would that sit with our prime minister? Can you picture the two of them at the table?
Well, I think if we end up with a Doug Ford-led Ontario, and we have John Tory, who is a true progressive conservative, re-elected as mayor, and of course then we have the Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, I think that is a scenario I can live with, because then Doug kind of becomes the ham in the sandwich, in the sense of, you know, he can't just... The problem with Doug is he's repeatedly said he wants to run the province like a business. And
He wants it open for business. He's going to put up a sign, actually.
He does want to run it like a business. And that's part of a problem with an unknown like Doug, who has not worked at the provincial level before, nor the federal level, is that government is not a business, and government should never be run like a business. So I think if we have that scenario where Doug Ford is leading Ontario, and we have John Tory as mayor of Canada's largest city in Toronto, and we have Justin Trudeau as the prime minister, I think that that relationship can work. I mean, Justin Trudeau has proven, despite a few recent missteps on some foreign trips, he has proven that he is quite the diplomat, particularly with his relationship with Donald Trump. He has somehow managed to, I don't think it's a friendship, there's somehow a respect between the two men, and Justin Trudeau has figured out how to deal with him extremely effectively, and I think Justin will be able to do the same with Doug Ford.
Okay, well, let me get Sally in the conversation here, because Sally, you're out west, and if I cast my mind back many, many years, I can remember the sort of axis of power of Ralph Klein and Mike Harris back in the day, very plain spoken. I mean, Ralph Klein said stuff that is mild, or rather that with Doug Ford looks mild compared to that when he was in office. Could Justin Trudeau be possibly facing the possibility of these two guys on the national scene? What would that look like?
Well, you know, I particularly in Alberta, certainly hope that's not the case, but it is well within the realm of possibility. And it will massively change the dynamic of the Federation, I think. I mean, I come from Newfoundland originally, where, you know, if a provincial government is down in the polls at all, the best thing to do is get into a really good scrap with the federal government.
Yeah.
You know, and we haven't seen a whole lot of that recently. You know, even over the pipeline issue with Alberta and BC, it's still not the same kind of, you know, Ralph Klein or Danny Williams or even Mike Harris to a certain extent, like, fight with the feds. And I think that's where we have a scenario where we'll see a lot more of that.
Okay, Jamie, last word to you on this. I mean, you know, Saskatchewan's talking about going to court on the carbon tax issue. Doug Ford's echoing the same stuff. He becomes premier. Is he going to be Justin Trudeau's worst nightmare?
I think that's definitely going to put a thorn in the side of the prime minister. In his early years of the Trudeau term, he had the benefit of having provincial governments on side and kind of singing from the same song sheet. If you look at what Jason Kenney's already doing in soaking up the national conversation as leader of the opposition in Alberta, and what the new premier in Saskatchewan's doing, adding Ontario to that voice definitely will change federal politics, and it's probably good for keeping the size of government down.
Well, we will see. We will see. Lots of elections coming up in the next couple of years. All right. On the other side of this, we're going to talk about our prime minister, because he's been very busy running all over the country. Well, all over Quebec and Ontario anyway, going to steel mills and aluminum mills. So we're going to talk about his tour and what impact that could have on our NAFTA negotiations when we come back on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
The exemption represented a positive step in the right direction, but we still have a lot more work to do. But know that we will continue to pull out all the stops to get the best possible results for Canadians and their families. We had your backs last week, and we always will.
That was Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, of course, on his Steel Wheels tour, going to steel mills and aluminum mills across, refineries rather, across Quebec and Ontario, because we know that tariffs will be imposed if Donald Trump changes his mind and NAFTA falls through, the renegotiation, that is. Donald Trump giving us a break on the tariffs for 30 days. But what is going to be the outcome of this? We're going to talk to our political panel now about how these negotiations are going and whether this is a show of force by Trudeau or just some grandstanding. Is it going to help at all? Joining us on the lines, Jamie Ellerton, principal at Canaptus Limited, Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited, and Lisa Kinsella, managing partner of Daisy Consulting Group. Jamie, let me start with you. How do you rate Justin Trudeau's little tour here? Is this going to accomplish anything?
Well, coming out of India, it appears he saw better judgment and left the Tin Man costume at home while he's
no tinfoil hat, no, okay.
Across the province and across the country. I think what he's doing right now is definitely smart politics. I have no doubt the Trudeau administration was talking with the Trump administration on this, and it'll be widely debated whether it was congressional Republicans who ultimately led Trump to back down and give Mexico and Canada the exemption. But after January, February of a lot of negative media press, this Steel Town tour is probably doing him a bit of good.
Okay, Sally, Steel Town's supposed to be the home of the NDP. You know, we're thinking union, thinking blue collar here. Is Justin Trudeau defending these industries for general purposes or also politically? Is it important to him?
I think it's helpful on a number of political levels. One of what Jamie just said is he needed a bit of a win, but yeah, absolutely there is that element of, you know, standing up. It's good to show him this effort of portraying him not, you know, vacationing on a billionaire's island, but, you know, standing up for good working class union jobs, right?
Is that maybe why he didn't meet? Because the royals from Belgium were here the same week, same day, and some people criticized him for not meeting the king and queen of Belgium. Do you think that optic might have not played as well as him at a steel plant?
Yeah, I think exactly that. You know, people go, oh, there he is hobnobbing again, right? Now, in terms of, you know, going forward, what this means for NAFTA, and, you know, it's great. I think there was a sigh of relief breathed when you know, we heard we're going to be exempt from this tariff. But it's not a celebration. And I think we still got this kind of like sword of Damocles hanging over us in that if things don't go Trump's way, and he is, as we know and we've seen, he's volatile in terms of decision making. I think he's using this as a, you know, a bargaining chip, and that should still be cause for concern and definitely nervousness for obviously a lot of the kind of steel town in Ontario, but also where I live in Regina, Saskatchewan. Evraz Steel is a huge employer in Regina, and so I think there's still a lot of nervous people out there.
Okay, Lisa, should we be nervous now that Trump has done something volatile? He's dumped Rex Tillerson as his Secretary of State. Tillerson had a good relationship with Chrystia Freeland in the course of the NAFTA negotiations. He's gone now, replaced by, you know, one minute to the next, by Mike Pompeo, the former CIA director with which she has no relationship and who might not have Canada at the top of his priority list.
Well, you know, in terms of Trump's volatility and the decisions he makes, I think the dumping of Tillerson is like a 3 on the volatility scale. So, because we've seen, right? Like, let's be honest.
But it affects us. My point is this, I mean, bringing it home here, these kinds of decisions affect us.
Absolutely.
At a time when it's really critical for us to get this deal.
Absolutely. And I've always maintained that the team that Justin Trudeau has around him on the U.S. NAFTA file is extremely competent and extremely bright, and they're very good at diplomacy. Chrystia Freeland, in particular, I think, has just shone on this file in terms of her ability to manage relationships and get things done. And what I had said in the previous segment about Justin Trudeau, he does have this uncanny ability, you know, India notwithstanding, an uncanny ability on how to maintain relationships with foreign presidents and prime ministers. And the relationship he has with Donald Trump, it goes beyond what we see in the public sphere. And I think the team has always been ready and they've had contingency plans in place. You know, the exemption that we got from Trump, I mean, none of us knew what was going to happen because
we changed his mind twice on that. It was, you know.
But that's what we know from Twitter. We don't know what was happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I think Canada is well positioned. I think Trudeau did exactly right by going out on this tour, both as a show of force and to reassure Canadians that he intends to keep fighting for us. I think both the U.S. and Canada agrees that they'd like NAFTA to move at a quicker pace, but neither country is willing to concede anything that will not be in their country's best interest. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a road ahead here, and it's not going to be easy. And Ms. Freeland now has to, of course, go out and make a new relationship with someone who perhaps isn't as close to her ideologically as Tillerson was with respect to these issues. But I have no doubt that she can do it. And okay. I think the team around him is extremely capable.
Well, I think so far so good, I will say. I think they have done a decent job. I want to switch gears because this is an issue that came up today for the third party in the House of Commons, the NDP, that, speaking of India, refuses to die. It's an issue that has dogged Jagmeet Singh since he became leader. If you remember, Terry Malevsky of the CBC had asked some very pointed questions about Sikh extremism, and people took the journalist Terry Malevsky to task for that. But the issue has never quite gone away. And now some video has surfaced of Jagmeet Singh when he attended a Sikh separatist rally in San Francisco in 2015. He was speaking there about at this rally. And the rally itself was apparently venerating a violent Sikh religious leader who was killed in the Indian Army assault on the Golden Temple in 1984 that many Sikhs consider an act of genocide by the Indian government. And we know that Justin Trudeau was just in India, and the whole controversy arose there around him being in the company and his wife taking a picture with someone who was also was convicted of terrorism related to Sikh extremism as well. But this case, Jagmeet Singh was speaking there, and he accused India of genocide against the Sikhs. One of the things he said, listen to another excerpt that he spoke about when he was giving that speech in San Francisco.
They're attacking us as Sikhs for our identity, for our beliefs. Our response must be, let's create more Sikhs. Let's build more Sikhi. Let's grow more Sikhi. Let's plant the seeds of Sikhi. That's our response. If they want to cut them, they want to end us, then our response will be, you will not end us. We will grow stronger. We will grow louder and prouder. You will see more Sikhs across this country. You will see more Sikhs across this world. And one of the beauties of Sikhi is that Sikhi isn't a faith of numbers. Sikhi, we've never had the majority of numbers. We've had the strength of our beliefs.
Okay, that's a really, you know, he's speaking, Sally, there from a very personal religious perspective. If you had a Christian or a Muslim going out as someone who was a politician, he was at the time, I think he was a member of the legislature here in Ontario. If you had someone going out there and saying those kinds of things, I think the media would be all over it. Now, in fairness, he did issue a statement saying that, when I was there, I spoke directly about the pain in the community, my own path to learning about my heritage. My response was to embrace my identity and work harder to stand up for human rights and not allow the voices of the marginalized to be made silent. But I'm wondering if this is going to hurt the NDP. And I'm wondering on your take on that and how it could affect him and the Liberals, how they might exploit that, sorry to say, in the next election.
Yep. Well, I mean, I think what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is any kind of Canadian political involvement in very complex international affairs is usually not going to end particularly well for that politician. I think it's something that Jagmeet Singh, I thought the statement today in terms of the response was good, but this is going to continue to come up, and it is something he's going to have to continue to. He said he supports the right to self-determination, whether that's in India or in Scotland or Catalonia or, geez, well, Newfoundland separatism or for whatever reason. And that's within the United Nations. So that's his position on that. He said unequivocally that he doesn't support any form of terrorism or extremism, but whether that's going to be satisfactory to the Canadian public remains to be seen. And I think you're right. I think it will be an issue that continues to come up.
Yeah, okay. Lisa, he says, I'm not a citizen of India or an Indian politician. Self-determination means respecting the views of people in whatever country to choose their own path. That's fine. But this, you know, the issue is exactly that. It's an issue for India. Why is it continuing to taint Canadian politics?
Well, I think, I mean, aside from the fact that we kind of have this convergence of issues, you know, but Mr. Singh, you know, I know him. He's a well-respected politician. He did a very good job in the Ontario legislature. But I think this story today that we read in the Globe, I think the story that we've read raises more questions than answers, because Mr. Singh did not answer the questions put to him by the reporter. He chose not to answer them, saying that, you know, I'm not going to answer questions about a country that I don't live in. But those weren't the questions he was being asked. He was being asked about whether or not he supported these issues, and he deflected and dodged, and then, of course, has subsequently put out this statement. I do think that this issue will continue to potentially dodge Mr. Singh. He has to find a way to kind of wrap this up and make sure that it's not something that follows him into the next federal election. Fortunately, he has a year and a half to do that, and I think he just may be able to. But he certainly doesn't help himself when he's refusing to answer reporters' questions that are legitimate questions.
Yeah, Jamie, you know, this issue has dogged him now since the beginning of his leadership. And, you know, he walked in a rally where there were signs saying India out of Sikh homeland, 1984 Sikh genocide independence. Should he have done that at the time? And how can he, I guess, get past this? Can he?
I think he's going to have to be absolutely categorical in denouncing the Sikh extremists who committed the most deadly attack in Canadian history, which was the Air India bombing. Stop flirting with extremism by perverting the word genocide and what calling the Sikh massacre of 1984 just that, and be categorical about it going forward. Instead of like trying to pander to the worst instincts and inflaming a situation, he could instead show leadership and to condemn it outright rather than just kind of blandly denouncing all terrorism and extremism, which of course everybody would. Until he categorically denounces these things specifically, I think this is going to be something that continues to dog him, and it should. Canadians need to hold him to account.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today, folks. I want to thank you so much for your opinions. Jamie Allerton, principal at Canaptus Limited, Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited, and Lisa Kinsella, managing partner of Daisy Consulting Group. Have a great afternoon, everybody.